Chapter 22. That in God existence and essence are the same. From what has been shown above, we may go on to prove that in God essence or quiddity is not distinct from his existence. For it has been shown above, that there is a thing which exists of itself necessarily, and this is God. Now necessary existence, if it belong to a quiddity which is not that existence itself, is either inconsistent with or repugnant to that quiddity, as per se existence is to the quiddity of whiteness, or else is consistent or akin thereto, for instance that whiteness exist in some other thing. In the former supposition it will not belong to that quiddity to exist per se necessarily, for instance it becomes not whiteness to exist per se. In the second hypothesis, either this existence must be dependent on the essence, or both of them on some other cause, or the essence on the existence. The first two are in contradiction with the very notion of necessary per se existence, for if it depend on something else, it no longer exists necessarily. From the third supposition it follows that this quiddity is added accidentally to the thing which exists per se necessarily, because whatever follows on the essence of a thing is accidental thereto. Therefore God has not an essence distinct from his existence. Against this, however, it might be urged that this existence does not depend absolutely on this essence, and in such a way that it would not be at all unless the essence were, but that it depends as regards the conjunction whereby they are united together. And thus this existence is per se necessary, while the conjunction is not per se necessary. But this answer does not avoid the above impossibility. For if this existence can be understood without this essence, it will follow that this essence is related accidentally to this existence. Now this existence is that which exists per se necessarily. Therefore this essence is related accidentally to that which exists per se necessarily. Therefore it is not its quiddity. But God is that which exists per se necessarily. Therefore this existence is not God's essence, but something subsequent thereto. On the other hand, if this existence cannot be understood apart from this essence, then this existence depends absolutely on that on which depends its conjunction with this essence, and thus the same conclusion follows. Further, each thing exists by its own existence. Wherefore that which is not its own existence does not exist per se necessarily. But God exists per se necessarily. Therefore God is his own existence. Moreover, if God's existence is not his essence, and it cannot be a part of him, since the divine essence is simple, as shown above, follows that this existence is something besides his essence. Now whatever is becoming to a thing besides its essence, is becoming to it through some cause, for those things which are not one per se, if they be united together, must needs be united through some cause. Therefore existence is becoming to that quiddity through some cause. Either, then, this cause is something essential to that thing, or the essence itself, or else it is some other thing. If the former, and the essence exists according to that existence, it follows that a thing is a cause of its own existence. But this is impossible, because according to the understanding the cause exists before the effect, and consequently if a thing is the cause of its own existence, it would be understood to exist before having existence, which is impossible unless it be understood that a thing is the cause of its own accidental existence, which is a relative existence. For this is not impossible, for we find an accidental being caused by the principles of its subject, before the substantial being of the subject is understood to exist. Now, however, we are speaking, not of accidental, but of substantial existence. If, on the other hand, existence be becoming to the essence, by reason of some other cause, then whatever acquires existence from another cause, is caused and is not the first cause, whereas God is the first cause, having no cause, as shown above. This quiddity that acquires existence elsewhere is not the quiddity of God. Therefore it is necessary that God's existence be his own quiddity. Moreover, existence denotes a kind of actuality, since a thing is set to exist, not through being in potentiality, but through being in act. Now everything to which an act is becoming, and which is distinct from that act, is related thereto as potentiality to act, since act and potentiality are reciprocal terms. Accordingly, if the divine essence is distinct from its existence, It follows that his essence and existence are mutually related as potentiality and act. Now it has been proved that in God there is nothing of potentiality, and that he is pure act. Therefore God's essence is not distinct from his existence. Again, whatsoever cannot exist unless several things concur, is composite. Now no thing in which essence and existence are distinct from one another can exist except several things concur, to wit its essence and existence. Therefore everything, in which essence and existence are distinct, is composite. But God is not composite, as proved above. Therefore God's existence is his essence. Further, everything exists through having existence. Therefore nothing the essence of which is not its existence, exists by its essence, but by participation of something, namely existence. Now that which exists by participation of something cannot be the first being, because that in which a thing participates in order to exist, is previous to that thing. But God is the first being, to which nothing is previous. Therefore God's essence is his existence. This sublime truth Moses was taught by the Lord, for when he asked the Lord, "If the children of Israel should say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them?" The Lord answered, "I am who am." Thus shalt thou say to the children of Israel, "He who is hath sent me to you," thus declaring his own name to be he who is. Now every name is appointed to signify the nature or essence of a thing. Wherefore it follows that God's very existence itself is his essence or nature. Moreover, the Catholic doctors have professed this truth. For Hilary says, Doctrine 8 taught a, existence is not an accident in God, but the subsisting truth, the abiding cause, and the natural property of his essence. And Boethius says, that the divine substance is existence itself, and all other existence proceeds therefrom. Chapter 23. That there is no accident in God. From this truth it follows of necessity that nothing can accrue to God besides his essence, nor anything be accidentally in him. For existence itself cannot participate in something that is not of its essence, although that which exists can participate in something else, because nothing is more formal or more simple than existence. Hence existence itself can participate in nothing. Now the divine substance is existence itself. Therefore he has nothing that is not of his substance. Therefore no accident can be in him. Moreover, whatever is in a thing accidentally, has a cause of being there, since it is added to the essence of that in which it is. Therefore if anything is in God accidentally, this must be through some cause. Consequently the cause of the accident is either the divine substance itself, or something else. If it is something else, this other thing must act on the divine substance, since nothing introduces a form, whether substantial or accidental, into some recipient, unless in some way it act upon that recipient, because to act is nothing but to make something to be actual, and it is this by a form. Wherefore God will be passive and movable to some agent, which is against what has been decided above. If, on the other hand, the divine substance itself is the cause of the accident that is in it, then it is impossible for it to be its cause as receiving it, since then the same thing in the same respect would make itself to be an act. Therefore, if there is an accident in God, it follows that he receives that accident in one respect, and causes it in another, even as bodies receive their proper accidents through the nature of their matter, and cause them through their form, so that God, therefore, will be composite, the contrary of which has been proved above. Again, every subject of an accident is compared thereto as potentiality to act, because an accident is a kind of form making a thing to exist actually according to accidental existence. But there is no potentiality in God, as shown above. Therefore there can be no accident in him. Moreover, everything in which something is accidentally is in some way changeable as to its nature, since an accident, by its very nature, may be in a thing or not in it. Therefore if God has something that becomes him accidentally, it follows that he is changeable, the contrary of which has been proved above. Further, everything that has an accident in itself, is not whatever it has in itself, because an accident is not of the essence of its subject, but God is whatever he has in himself. Therefore no accident is in God. The middle proposition is proved as follows: a thing is always to be found more excellently in the cause than in the effect. But God is the cause of all things, therefore whatever is in him is found in him in the most perfect way. Now that which is most perfectly becoming to a thing is that thing itself, because it is more perfectly one than when one thing is united to another substantially, as form is united to matter, which union again is more perfect than when one thing is in another accidentally. It follows therefore that God is whatever he has. Again, substance is not dependent upon accident, although accident depends on substance. Now that which is not dependent upon another can sometimes be found without it. Therefore some substance can be found without an accident, and this seemingly is most becoming to a supremely simple substance, such as the divine substance. Therefore the divine substance is altogether without accidents. The Catholic Tractarians also are in agreement with this statement. Wherefore Augustine says that there is no accident in God. Having established this truth, we are able to refute certain erroneous statements in the law of the Saracens to the effect that the divine essence has certain forms added thereto. Chapter 24. That the divine being cannot be specified by the addition of any substantial difference. Again, from what we have said above, it can be shown that we cannot add anything to the divine being so as to specify it by an essential specification, as a genus is specified by differences. For it is impossible that a thing be an act unless there be also all those things whereby its substantial being is specified. For an animal cannot be an act unless it be either a rational or an irrational animal. Wherefore also the Platonists, who postulated ideas, did not postulate per se existing ideas of genera, which derive specification from essential differences, but they postulated per se existing ideas of the species alone, which need not to be specified by essential differences. If, then, the divine being can receive an essential specification from something added to it, that being will not be an act without something added to it. But God's very being is his substance, as shown above. Therefore the divine substance cannot be an act without some addition, the contrary of which has been shown above. Again, whatever needs something added to it in order to exist is in potentiality to that thing. But the divine substance is not in potentiality in any way, as proved above, and God's substance is his being. Therefore his being cannot receive essential specification from something added to it. Moreover, whatever makes a thing to be an act and is intrinsic to that thing is either the whole essence thereof or part of its essence. Now that which specifies a thing by an essential specification makes a thing to be an act and is intrinsic to the thing specified, otherwise the latter could not be specified essentially thereby. Therefore it must be either the very essence or part of the essence of that thing. But if something be added to the divine being, it cannot be the whole essence of God, for it has already been proved that God's existence is not distinct from his essence. Therefore it follows that it is a part of the divine essence, and thus God would be composed of essential parts, the contrary of which was proved above. Again, that which is added to a thing by way of essential specification does not constitute the notion of that thing, but only makes it to be an act. For rational added to animal makes animal to be an act, but does not constitute the notion of an animal as such, because the difference does not enter into the definition of the genus. Now if something be added to God to specify him with an essential specification, it must give that to which it is added the notion of its proper quiddity or nature, since what is added thus gives the thing actual being. Now this, namely actual being, is the divine essence itself, as shown above. It follows, therefore, that nothing can be added to the divine being to give it an essential specification, as a difference specifies a genus. Chapter 25. That God is not in any genus. Hence it follows of necessity that God is not in any genus, for whatever is in a genus has in itself something whereby its generic nature is specified. For nothing is in a genus without being in some one of its species. But in God this is impossible, as shown above. It is impossible that God be in any genus. Moreover, if God be in a genus, he is either in the genus of accident, or in that of substance. He is not in the genus of accident, for an accident cannot be the first being and first cause. Nor can he be in the genus of substance, for substance that is a genus is not being itself, otherwise every substance would be its own being, and thus would not be caused by something else, which is impossible, as is clear from what we have said above. Now God is being itself. He is not in any genus. Again, whatever is in a genus differs as to being from the other things contained in the same genus, otherwise a genus would not be predicated of several things. Now all things that are contained in one same genus must agree in the whatness of the genus, because the genus is predicated of all in respect of what a thing is. Therefore the being of anything contained in a genus is beside the whatness of the genus. But this is impossible in God. Therefore God is not in a genus. Further, a thing is placed in a genus by the nature of its whatness, for genus is predicated of what a thing is. But the whatness of God is his very being. Now a thing is not placed in a genus according to its being, because then being would be a genus signifying being itself. It remains therefore that God is not in a genus. That being cannot be a genus is proved by the philosopher as follows. If being were a genus, it would be necessary to find a difference in order to contract it to a species. Now no difference participates in the genus, so that, to wit, the genus be contained in the notion of the difference, for thus the genus would be placed twice in the definition of the species, but the difference must be something besides that which is contained in the notion of the genus. Now there can be nothing besides that which is understood by being, if being belong to the notion of those things of which it is predicated, and thus by no difference can being be contracted. It remains, therefore, that being is not a genus, wherefore it follows of necessity that God is not in a genus. Wherefore it is likewise evident that God cannot be defined, since every definition is composed of genus and difference. It is also clear that no demonstration is possible in regard to him, because the principle of a demonstration is the definition of that about which the demonstration is made. Someone, however, might think that, although the name of substance cannot properly be applied to God, because God does not subsist under substat accidents, yet the thing signified by that term is applicable to him, and consequently he is in the genus substance. For substance is a per se being, and it is clear that this can be applied to God, from the fact that it has been proved that he is not an accident. But to this we reply, according to what has been said, that per se being is not in the definition of substance, for from the fact that it is described as a being it cannot be a genus, since it has been already proved that being has not the conditions of a genus. And again from the fact that it is described as being per se, for this would seem to denote nothing else than a negation, since it is said to be a per se being, through not being in another, which is a pure negation, and this cannot satisfy the conditions of a genus. For then a genus would not express what a thing is, but what it is not. Therefore we must understand the definition of substance in this way, that a substance is a thing to which it is fitting not to be in a subject, the word thing being taken from its quiddity, just as being is from existence, so that the meaning of substance is that it has a quiddity to which it is fitting to exist not in another. Now this does not apply to God, for he has no quiddity besides his existence. It follows that he is nowise in the genus of substance, and consequently that he is in no genus, since it has been proved that he is not in the genus of accident. Chapter 26. That God is not the formal being of all things. From the foregoing we are able to refute the error of some who have asserted that God is nothing else than the formal being of everything. For this being is divided into substantial and accidental being. Now the divine being is neither the being of a substance nor the being of an accident, as shown above. Therefore it is impossible for God to be the being whereby everything is formally. Again, things are not distinct from one another in that they have being, since in this they all agree. If, then, things differ from one another, it follows that either being itself is specified by certain differences added thereto, So that different things have a specifically different being, or that things differ in that being itself is attached to specifically different natures, but the former of these is impossible, because an addition cannot be attached to being in the same way as a difference is added to a genus, as already stated. It remains, therefore, that things differ because they have different natures, to which being is attached in different ways. Now the divine being is not attached to another nature, but is the nature itself, as shown above. If, therefore, the divine being were the formal being of all things, it would follow that all things are simply one. Moreover, the principle is naturally prior to that which flows from it. Now in certain things being has something by way of principle, since the form is said to be the principle of being, and in like manner the agent which gives certain things actual being. Therefore if the divine being is the being of each thing, it will follow that God, who is his own being, has a cause, and thus is not per se necessary being, the contrary of which has been shown above. Further, that which is common to many is not something besides those many except only logically. Thus animal is not something besides Socrates and Plato and other animals except as considered by the mind, which apprehends the form of animal as divested of all that specifies, and individualizes it. For man is that which is truly an animal, else it would follow that in Socrates and Plato there are several animals, namely animal in general, man in general, and Plato himself. Much less therefore being itself in general is something apart from all things that have being, except only as apprehended by the mind. If therefore God is being in general, he will not be an individual thing except only as apprehended in the mind. Now it has been shown above, that God is something not merely in the intellect, but in reality. Therefore God is not the common being of all. Again, generation is essentially the way to being, and corruption the way to not being. For the term of generation is the form, and that of corruption privation, for no other reason than because the form makes a thing to be, and corruption makes a thing not to be. For supposing a certain form not to give being, that which received that form would not be said to be generated. If, then, God were the formal being of all things, it would follow that he is the term of generation, which is false, since he is eternal, as we have shown above. Moreover, it would follow that the being of everything has been from eternity, wherefore there would be neither generation nor corruption. For if there were, it would follow that a thing acquires a new a being already pre-existing. Either then it is acquired by something already existing, or else by something no wise pre-existing. In the first case, since according to the above supposition all existing things have the same being, it would follow that the thing which is set to be generated, receives not a new being but a new mode of being, and therefore is not generated but altered. If on the other hand the thing no wise existed before, it would follow that it is made out of nothing, and this is contrary to the essence of generation. Consequently this supposition would wholly do away with generation and corruption, and therefore it is clear that it is impossible. Moreover, the sacred doctrine refutes this error, by confessing that God is high and elevated, and that he is over all things. For if he were the being of all, he would be something in all, and not above all. Those who err thus are condemned by the same sentence as idolaters who gave the incommunicable name, I.E., of God, to wood and stones. For if God is the being of all, it would be no truer to say a stone is a being than to say a stone is God. Now there are four things which apparently fostered this error. The first was a wrong understanding of certain authorities, for they found Dionysius saying the being of all is the superessential Godhead, and from this they wished to conclude that God is the formal being of all things, not perceiving that this meaning is irreconcilable with the words. For if the Godhead were the formal being of all, it would not be above all, but in the midst of all, in fact something of all. Wherefore when he said that the Godhead is above all, he declares it to be by its nature distinct from all and placed above all. And by saying that the Godhead is the being of all, he declares that all things derive from God a likeness to the divine being. Moreover, he elsewhere expressly prescribes their wrong interpretation, where he declares that there can be no contact with God nor mingling of him with other things, as of point with line, or of the shape of the seal on wax. The second cause of this error was defective reason, for since that which is common is specified or individualized by addition, they deemed the divine being, to which nothing is added, not to be some proper being, but the common being of all, not perceiving that the common or universal cannot be without some addition, though it be considered apart from any addition, for animal cannot be apart from the difference of rational or irrational, although we think of it apart from these differences. Moreover, although we think of the universal without an addition, we do not think of it apart from its receptivity of addition, for if no difference could be added to animal, it would not be a genus, and the same applies to all other names of things. Now the divine being is without addition, not only in thought but also in reality, and not only is it without addition, but also without receptivity of addition. Wherefore, from the very fact that it neither receives nor can receive addition, we should conclude rather that God is not common but proper being, since his being is distinct from all others for the very reason that nothing can be added to it. Hence the commentator says to causes, that the first cause, by reason of the very purity of its goodness, is distinct from others and, so to speak, individualized. The third cause of this error is the consideration of the divine simplicity. For since God is the extreme of simplicity, they thought that if we make an analysis of all that is in us, the last thing, being the most simple, must be God, for we cannot proceed indefinitely in the composition of the things that are in us. In this again their reason was lacking, that they failed to observe that what is most simple in us is not so much a complete thing as some part of a thing, whereas simplicity is ascribed to God as to a perfect subsistent being. The fourth thing that might lead them into this error is the expression whereby we say that God is in all things, for they failed to perceive that he is in things, not as part thereof, but as the cause of things, which is no wise wanting to its effect. For we do not say that the form is in the body in the same sense as we say that the sailor is in the boat. Chapter 27. That God is not the form of a body. Accordingly, having shown that God is not the being of all, it can be proved in like manner that God is not the form of anything. For the divine being cannot be the being of a quiddity that is not its own being, as shown above. Now that which is the divine being itself is no other than God. Therefore it is impossible for God to be the form of any other thing. Further, the form of a body is not its very being but the principle of its being. But God is being itself. Therefore God is not the form of a body. Again, the union of form and matter results in a composite, and this is a whole in respect of form and matter. Now the parts are in potentiality with respect to the whole, but in God there is no potentiality. Therefore it is impossible for God to be the form united to anything. Again, that which has being per se is more excellent than what has being in another. Now every form of a body has being in another. Since then God is the most excellent being, as the first cause of being, he cannot be the form of anything. Moreover, this can also be proved from the eternity of movement, as follows. If God were the form of a movable thing, since he is the first mover, the composite will be its own mover. But that which moves itself can be moved and not moved. Therefore it is in it to be either. Now a thing of this kind has not of itself indefectibility of movement. Therefore above that which moves itself we must place something else as first mover, which confers on it perpetuity of movement. And thus God, who is the first mover, is not the form of a body that moves itself. This argument avails for those who hold the eternity of movement. Yet if this be not granted, the same conclusion may be drawn from the regularity of the heavenly movement. For just as that which moves itself can both be at rest and be moved, so can it be moved with greater or less velocity. Wherefore the necessity of uniformity in the heavenly movement depends on some higher principle that is altogether immovable, and that is not the part, through being the form, of a body which moves itself. The authority of Scripture is in agreement with this truth, for it is written in the Psalm, "Thy magnificence is elevated above the heavens, and he is higher than heaven. And what wilt thou do?" The measure of him is longer than the earth, and deeper, than the sea. Hence we are able to refute the error of the pagans who asserted that God was the soul of the heaven or even the soul of the whole world, which led them to defend the idolatrous doctrine whereby they said that the whole world was God, not in reference to the body but to the soul, even as man is said to be wise in reference not to his body but to his soul, which being supposed they deemed it to follow that divine worship is not unduly shown to the world and its parts. The commentator also says that this occasioned the error of the Zabian people, i.e., of idolaters, because, to wit, they asserted that God was the soul of the heaven. Dash.